News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000 watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 6th of July, Anno Domini 2008. And you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Chris Reich.
We didn't hear you.
Have you forgotten?
You got to push.
And
button.
I'm Rob Linton. Yes, I forgot where all the buttons were.
I cut everything.
Steve off. Hang on.
Now, we don't have any of the things working today, and Rob is out of the Turkish prison, but he can only see out of one eye and having a little trouble with his left hand. So we're finding that he's having a little tough time with some of the...
Ah, that explains the limp.
But at any rate, you know who we are and what we do and everything else.
Hope so. After coming up to 19 years?
Yeah, we're coming up on 19 years now. This is 18 years, 10 months, and 3 days we've been on the air. We've made a little change, after all. Why not change it up a little bit?
Stay the same.
And one of the things that we're doing now is we're talking about the poll at the top of the show as well as at the top of the second hour, because that gives people an opportunity, if they want to comment on the poll. This is only the second week we're doing that, so nobody's actually commented yet. But perhaps people will have things to say about this one. And if you do, leave out company names, please. For the first time, fiber-based broadband access is expanding faster than cable. 4.2 million compared to 2.5 million subscribers were added during the first quarter, according to analysts at Topic Point. It's a significant milestone for fiber optic broadband where it is available. Consumers will take fiber over other broadband technologies. Really? Johnson is convinced that fiber will become the biggest access technology. In 3 to 5 years, it will pass cable, and that it will be about 10 years before it becomes bigger than DSL, he said, which is digital subscriber line, of course. That is, unless something happens to make it possible for DSL to keep up with bandwidth demands. There are over 42 million fiber broadband users worldwide, compared to 79.6 million for cable and 238 million DSL subscribers. DSL is adding more subscribers than fiber in absolute numbers, but not in percentage growth. Users who choose fiber are getting more bits for the buck, according to Point Topic. The cost for fiber can get as low as 50 cents per megabyte per month, compared to 20 for DSL and 12 for cable, taking global averages. That has nothing to do with local anything. It's completely global. The growth of fiber numbers is being driven by China, which is closing in on the U.S. in terms of total number of subscribers. Japan and South Korea, where cable and DSL are losing subscribers to fiber. Collectively, Asia amounts to over 35 million subscribers, according to Point Topic. In the U.S. and Europe, fiber is having a harder time. Deploying the technology is still expensive, and incumbent operators are reluctant to share infrastructure, according to Johnson. Without some form of centralized funding, it will take a long time before consumers in these markets get access to cheaper bandwidth, said Johnson, which leads us to our poll of the day, which is, which net connection do you have? And the choices are DSL, cable, still on dial-up, you insensitive clod, other, fiber, and none. Wait, what? So far, we've got about 77 votes. And cable is winning. DSL not too close behind and still on dial-up, you insensitive clod. So that's our poll, and we'd love to have you call in and talk about it. And while you're waiting on the line, take a look at the little yellow box underneath. If you click on Give Us Your Opinion, it takes you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Ding.
Still looking for the button.
Weren't you paying
any
attention?
What are you doing? You're an hour early.
I just told people, you have not been paying any attention.
I have not. I have not listened to the radio in 3 weeks.
He still didn't
listen in the last 5 minutes either. He's playing with buttons.
What we're talking about is we're doing the poll twice. First at the top of the show and then at the top of the hour, so that people have a chance to call in and comment on the poll if they would like to. Giving people the opportunity.
Well, thank you for the memo. Go ahead, try it again.
To
AskNick.com.
Thank you so much. All right, there we go. Where you can leave an opinion. All right, we've got enough of that. We should move probably on to the phones at this point. We will start with Jerry from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Jerry. What's your question?
Hi. I have McAfee virus protection.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And about 30 days ago, it would download. Let me tell you first, I have dial-up, okay? So it would still download, but it won't install it. And I tried to chat with them online. They give me all kinds of stupid information that doesn't work. All right. My question to you is my subscription will be running out as of August 30th. I will not uninstall and reinstall. It'll take forever to redo that. And there is a new software I just heard about, Trend. Is that any good to use over McAfee?
Trend Micro is okay. But we still like both the Avast or AVG for antivirus, using Super Anti-Spyware for spam control, and a product like Zone Alarm for a firewall. All being free, and they tend to update them more frequently and do a better job of protection. And like I say, the key thing is they're free.
Do I have to download? Okay, Zone Alarm, and what else did you say?
All right. Either Avast or AVG for antivirus.
Is that AVAST?
AVG and yes. AVAST.
Is right. In Avast, me hearties.
Yeah, it's two different companies that make a free antivirus program.
And they're better than McAfee.
Better is a very subjective term, but they're a lot lighter on your system. They don't take as much horsepower and oomph away from your computer. And it's, in some cases, a smaller company is better because the virus writers know about McAfee and Norton. They don't bother releasing a virus until it can get past them. So having Norton and or McAfee may not do you any good because the virus writers are getting past them.
Okay. So what do you think of Trend?
Trend is a nice product.
Because I have a coupon for I don't know if I can say
well,
it.
Well, interestingly enough, the Trend...
Yeah, I can get it free.
Right, the Trend products are both distributed freely by Frontier and Time Warner to their internet subscribers.
Okay, I don't have them. I have dial-up.
Right.
But I have a
dial-up, but
go
not
to
Frontier.
Circuit City to buy this and get the rebate back and get it free without... My objective is I cannot download. It takes forever and ever and ever.
Well, that has nothing to do with your antivirus.
Right, right. But the thing you're going to find there is you still have to download updates.
Right.
So whatever you get, now if you go and buy Trend Micro and install it, that's perfectly acceptable, and it is a good product. Mm-hmm. You will still have to download updates.
Right.
All right. That's
okay.
But Trend Micro is a good product.
Thank you.
Thanks. You know, those of us who have been on broadband forever, whether it's cable, DSL, whatever, whatever, we forget how very, 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 very many people are on dial-up.
There was just a study I read this week that they interviewed thousands of dial-up subscribers and asked them why they don't move up to broadband. And for a lot of them, it's, I don't need anything faster. I don't want to pay anything more.
Right. Right.
Yeah, and then for a huge number of them, it's, I live too far out in the boonies to get anything faster.
Right, right. But, for example, they can't do Second Life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can't go to half the websites out there.
Because there's and Flash.
Oh,
and
exactly.
And, yeah.
I was at whichever one it is that does Heroes. Is that NBC? NBC website yesterday, looking at the new Heroes quasi trailer. It was horrid. It was all Flash, all moving, jumping. It looked like a pachinko parlor. It was, fine. But the point is, how many people can't go there? I get email all the time about Ask Nick because it is so sparse. Very little in the way of pictures, very little in the way of anything else. People thank me. They say, I love your site.
It loads
easy
so
to get
fast.
To. Same thing with sound bites.
Yep.
It's easy to get to. It loads fast. I don't have to worry about even with an older machine, blah, 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 blah. And people like that. And I, frankly, I like it.
I was listening to some podcast this week where they were talking about the olden days of the internet, you know, 5 years ago, where people used to optimize their, it was on that same thing about Bill Gates leaving.
Right.
Back 15, 20 years ago, people used to optimize their code so it would run faster. And a website, you know, if your homepage was more than 10 or 15K, you cut it down more.
It used to be if it loaded in more than 4 seconds. Yep. It was ugly. Now it's 100 megs
and
whatever the number.
And it was Bill Gates that famously said, we stopped optimizing our code because by the time it gets released, the machines are faster.
Yep. All right. The firewall program that we mentioned earlier, somebody just called in and requested that. That's Zone Alarm. Z-O-N-E-A-L-A-R-M. Zone Alarm. ZoneLabs.com. That's Z-O-N-E-L-A-B-S. ZoneLabs.com.
But like we've said before, if they just go to the Security Tango page, they will find all these products that we recommend and, steps in how to do the Tango.
Right.
Everything's all there, all inclusive.
Right. Our next caller, Tom from Red Creek. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
I've got the download. I use in Firefox.
Right.
And I went to on my wife's computer. I try to use listen to SWAM, and it tells me I have to download an ActiveX plugin.
Right?
Now, isn't ActiveX the problem that causes Internet Explorer to be such a problem?
Well, ActiveX can be a problem. The question is, where are you getting your ActiveX from? WAM is certainly a trustworthy site.
Mm-hmm. The danger, though, is that once you have ActiveX on and enabled, you can accidentally go to untrustworthy sites that downloads and install things without your knowledge.
One question for you. Are you using Firefox 3?
No, I've got that up on my computer, but I haven't done hers yet.
Okay, because when you do that, you've also got to insert the IE tab software, the plugin. Because once you get there to see the webcam or the streaming, WAM's got some instructions there. You just follow those, and they work well.
I'll admit this. I have no idea why they've done what they've done. You know, they want the stream to get out there so people can listen to it, and they made it hard. I don't know why.
Well, they want it counted so the advertisers know they're getting money for their dollars.
Yeah, but that means there are a lot of people who can't get to it.
Yeah, it's...
Well, it was working fine for me before they did their latest upgrade, and I don't know why my computer upstairs gets it, because I use Firefox up there also. I must have downloaded ActiveX at some point, I guess.
Right.
But, I couldn't the other day on my wife's, and I was kind of surprised. Then I saw, what they wanted me to download, and I thought, now, can there be a further problem? I mean, one of the guys just said, if I went to a different site and pick up some ActiveX problem there.
You could. You absolutely could. As we said right at the beginning of your call, if you enable ActiveX, you could then end up someplace where ActiveX would be bad.
So when you want to use it, you enable it, and then when you want to be safe, you disable it.
Well, since you guys are running WAM, why don't you...
this may come as a shock to you, Tom, but we don't run anything here.
We run our mouths.
Basically, my nose. That's about it. That's the only thing I run here. We're going to take a quick break while we finish running the rest of the universe.
Call the business line during business hours and voice your complaints, and maybe they'll be able to change something.
Exactly. We have Dave Enright, Steve Wright, Chris Wright. Rob Linton has returned to us. I'm Nick Francesco. It's 20 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Hey, this is exciting. Apple has quietly reduced the price of its most expensive notebook by $500, cutting the cost of the upper-end MacBook Air to $2,598. The MacBook Air, which Apple launched in January to some fanfare, has been sold in two configurations since then, with a traditional 80-gigabyte magnetic platter hard drive and a 1.6 gigahertz Intel Core 2 Duo processor, or with a 64-gigabyte solid-state drive and a 1.8 gigahertz CPU. Solid-state drives are built from flash memory, and unlike hard drives, bless you, have no moving parts. The MacBook Air with the solid-state drive is more expensive than the one with the hard drive, but several Apple-specific websites, including Apple Insider, noticed that Apple had dropped the price of the SSD-equipped model by 16% on Thursday. Prior to the price cut, the solid-state MacBook Air sold for $3,098. The less expensive hard drive-equipped MacBook Air retained its $1,799 price tag, according to the Apple Online Store. The price cut came from the changes on two of the MacBook Air options. Selecting the SSD now adds $599 to the price of the notebook compared to $999 earlier. Also lowered was the 1.8 gigahertz processor option from $300 extra to $200 extra. Traditionally, Apple announces price reductions, which in themselves are relatively rare since the company often retains earlier models' prices, but changes the configurations to, for instance, add more RAM when it rolled out fresh or new hardware. The price cut means that the SSD-equipped Mac Air is no longer Apple's most expensive notebook. That honor has now passed to the 17-inch MacBook Pro, which continues to sell for $2,799 in its default configuration. So the MacBook Air has lowered in price. Is that simply because of manufacturing costs, or are they not selling enough of them?
It's probably a little of both. And there's been a couple of studies that have come out that the theory, at least, is a solid-state hard drive will run faster and use less battery because there's no moving parts. Apparently, neither of those is proving to be true or significantly.
Well, I just read a very lengthy comparison. This was on a Linux system between a system with a solid-state drive and the exact same system with a hard drive. And that was only 4,500 RPM. But it was, 15, 20% faster and everything. Now, you get the 4,500 RPM, so you get the 5,400s or the 7,200s. How much faster would the SSD be?
When even then, rotational speed is becoming less important on hard drives because they've done other things to make the throughput faster.
Right. Where you really continue to win is in random reads.
Yeah.
That's huge, hugely different on a solid-state drive. The big thing, of course, is not the speed, but the reliability.
Right.
You can, if you've got a laptop, it makes a lot more sense to have a solid state drive.
Well, and the danger, though, is with a solid state drive, the way the technology works, you are damaging the drive every time you write to it.
Well, that's actually also true of a hard drive. I mean, you still have more writes to an SSD than you do to a hard drive.
If you get a solid state drive that is built as one, as opposed to an adapter with a compact flash drive,
right.
They have algorithms in there that minimize writing to
You never write to the same section again.
Right. But it uniformly degrades.
They are all tools. Tools wear out.
Right. So you should have a backup.
You still never assume. And people are always shocked at hard drives. A hard drive died. It was only 5 years old. Well, you got about 2 years more out of it than I thought you would.
And how many times have you fixed your car in that last 5 years?
Yeah, right.
Google did a great... let's go back to Apple and the Google site. There was also a report of a couple of weeks ago that Apple's peripherals, when you do peripheral upgrades, when you customize your computers, cost more than third parties. And the big headline was, you upgrade your hard drive from 200 to 300, it's going to cost more at Apple than at Dell. We don't know what brand hard drive it is. Maybe Apple's using better quality drive.
Right.
That's always been the contention at Apple, is that they use better quality rather than the cheaper components.
Well, and you'd have to be an idiot to think that when you get a branded drive from any company, you're not paying a little more for the branding.
Right.
I mean, that's simply true. Yeah, whether it's Apple or IBM or Dell, you buy their product and you will pay a premium over generic for the name.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But that also may include a better warranty or just a little more peace of mind or whatever, but you're paying for that as well.
Right.
Yeah. Well, one school of thought is that if you're going to get the Apple hardware and the Apple protection plan, you might as well pay the extra premium for the Apple upgrades because they will cover that as well.
And then there's one warranty point.
Right.
That's a huge thing in the PC where you have a custom-built PC, one company for the motherboard, one company for the video card, one company for the power supply, and they all blame each other for the problem.
Right.
You never get
the
thing fixed. But then going back to hard drives, Google released a study. How many hard drives do they have? And so they studied a few 100,000 hard drives and went through their failure rates, and it's about a 20% failure rate per year.
Right.
So in the first year, there's a 20% chance that your drive will fail. In the second year, there's a 40% chance it'll fail. The third year, there's a 60% chance that it'll fail.
Right. By the time you get to year five, it's 100%.
Right. So, don't expect your drives to last more than 2 or 3 years.
Right.
Well, I mean...
And that's why you back up.
Well, and that's because they've gotten so much cheaper. And then on the other side of that, we're getting so much more per gig. I remember paying $1,000 for a 100 meg drive. Now, a 1 terabyte drive was, $300?
Yep.
So that you have so much more to lose now, too. They're packing the bits so tight, And the technology of the read heads trying to stay on track when the bits are that tight is just getting to be so immense that there's more and more stuff being stored.
Well, you must get it all the time, and I get it. Folks will sit there and say, well, what causes a hard drive to die? Why do they die like that?
Sunspots is my typical answer.
There you go.
And then I go on, because we're at a very high solar min. We're actually in a solar min cycle now on the 22-year solar cycle, but it's a very high minimum.
Right.
So we're seeing a lot more solar radiation than usual.
Well, I usually just tell them it's like a light bulb. You know, a light bulb, it doesn't give you any warning or signs that it's going. Usually they just go to turn it on and it goes pop, and there it goes.
You almost never know why anything breaks.
Yeah.
A hard drive is nothing but a piece of plastic with rust embedded in it. For God's sake,
spinning
at some
really,
point,
really fast.
Ridiculous fast. And at some point, something's going to fail.
And it's electronic. And I mean, they can get hot. I mean, the heat in that inside the boxes can build up and.
Let me put it as simply as I can. There are bearings in there. There's a motor, and it has bearings.
Mm-hmm.
Every motor with bearings can fail.
And all this having been said, I think it would be fair to also say that as time has gone on in the technology, they have become more and more reliable.
There's no question of that. Which is why you only get a 20% failure rate a year now.
Yeah, the joke is mean time between failure. It's 100,000 hours mean time between failure. That means one drive died in a day and one drive lasted 10 years.
Yeah, right.
I've had drives for a while there. When the 80 gigs came out, Western Digital was having a heck of a time with the old 80 gigs.
Yep.
And they ran through a batch that, I mean, I got six drives in. Four were literally dead right out of the bag. I pull them out, wouldn't spin up and do anything. I had to stay away from them for a while.
We actually had that happen to a customer. We put a brand new hard drive in her computer. She came back a week later because some other store said we put the bad hard drive back in because it broke again, and they have never seen a hard drive fail. Well, never go back to that store again.
Yeah,
but yeah, I'm sorry. It happens sometimes. It was a brand new drive we put in, and the new drive also was dead.
Yeah. If you've never seen a hard drive fail, you've only been in business a week.
Right.
Yeah, really.
That's a simple fact of life. And people do. You've heard it here. You get calls. Sounds like your hard drive's dead. Dead silence on the other end of the line. But it's only 2 years old. Okay.
Doesn't matter.
Well, I love the ones where it's been making this funny noise for 6 months and it won't turn on today.
Yeah.
It's not. See, in that way, it's kind of like your car. Listen to the noises your computer makes.
Yeah.
Or the lack of noises sometimes.
Right.
I had one customer.
No fan.
They were saying,
yeah, it got really quiet, and I liked that.
It boots up for a little while, but then it's shutting right down. So I had him bring it in, and you open it up, and one, the power supply fan was totally shot. It wasn't making any noise, so it was not blowing any air. And they let it go so long that even the CPU fan quit.
Yeah.
Because it got so hot in there.
Well, this guy was talking about his laptop, the guy who did the study of doing all these tests with this regular drive, then put in a solid state drive. He said, all of a sudden at one point, I heard the fan kick in and it went up really high. And I thought something's wrong. And then I realized I've never heard the fan before.
Actually, if the fan kicks in, something's right.
Yeah, exactly.
It detected a problem and tried to correct it.
So he looked at what was going on. And in fact, his backup had started to run, which is very CPU intensive, as it's pulling stuff off the drive and compressing it. And he had this whole backup thing that did all that. So the CPU was running high, so the fan went on to cool the CPU. But that's another reason that the MacBook Air went solid state, is because when something is that thin, there simply is no room to get rid of the heat. And SSD drives, solid state drives, actually are way less heat prone than, if you have moving parts, you have heat. Friction. You live with that.
One thing with the aluminum computers is the whole computer is a giant heat sink.
There's that.
So they can distribute.
But they do get awfully hot.
Yeah, we can't call them laptops anymore because you can't keep them on your lap that long.
Well, I wonder how much of a weight advantage there is with solid-state drives over the 2.5-inch laptops.
They are lighter.
But how much?
Every ounce counts.
Of course, when you're carrying it.
Yeah, when you're running to make that connection at Chicago on the other end of the terminal.
Well, plus you have less moving parts. I mean, you don't have those actuators spinning in and out and, droppage, because you can have a head crash. If you just drop it flat, granted, normally they park the drives, but there's still always that potential. Whereas if it's just flash memory.
Well, and how many times have you seen somebody who's running their system pick it up and move it to another table?
Yep.
There's inertia, and there's all kinds of stuff going on.
And
there
they have to squeeze it to pick it up to get a grip on it. And, and it's you know, the hard drive is right there in the front.
Right, exactly. All right, our next caller is Victor from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Victor. What's your question?
Hi, I finally reluctantly downloaded the Firefox 3 last week, and I love it.
Good.
But I found out some of my add-ons didn't work, so I found out about an add-on called Nightly Tester Tools, and what this does, it forces the old add-ons to work, and it's terrific.
Yeah, it is terrific until you come across an add-on that doesn't force.
Well, so far, I personally haven't found that.
Right. Mm-hmm. There are a bunch of very, very good ones that are out there. The nice thing about the add-on people is they're working very hard to make their stuff work with 3. When I first booted up my Firefox 3, there were 3 or 4 plugins I use regularly that just simply didn't work. And I thought, all right, well, I'll wait a day or two and see what happens. Next day, 2 of them were fixed.
And that's
the
usually all
that,
you have to wait is a day or two.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
they're jumping on it fast.
Exactly.
Because it is open source.
Yeah, so I wouldn't get too excited about that since I think you wait a day or two. And they pop up automatically. Firefox 3 is a very hot product. It is much lower in terms of RAM usage and processor usage.
Doesn't do pre-caching, which is a huge thing for people to dial-up.
Right.
And paying by the meg.
Paying by the meg, which we may all be doing soon.
Yep.
So, yeah, Firefox 3, in terms of its footprint, both in your machine and on your phone bill or on your bill, is much, much lower. So I think you've made the right move, Victor.
And they did set their Guinness record they were shooting for, 8 million downloads.
Yeah, they were shooting for 5. They
got 8.
Overshot.
In a 24-hour period.
I helped.
Well, what was funny is they announced all this ahead of time. We want to set this record, and then their servers went down because they were overwhelmed.
Yes.
But there were enough other sites that I also
mirrors
had
and cedars,
I mean, I went to CNN, or CNET, rather. CNET.
Right.
I always loved going to CNET or Geek Squad.
Right.
Or not Geek Squad.
Well, at any rate, Victor, I'm delighted that you like Firefox 3, and you're right. Nightly Tester Tools does a good job of making things work, but those add-ons will upgrade soon if they haven't already. So I think you'll find Firefox 3 to be a terrific, terrific browser. Not quite Lynx, but still very good.
And a lot of times,
for those of you who are wondering what Lynx is, there's 2 ways to spell it, L-I-N-K-S or L-Y-N-X, and it's a text-only browser. I actually
like
have
one of the first, wasn't it?
Well, yes and no. Yeah, I mean, it's been upgraded. It does a lot of stuff now. But I have actually used it on a very, very old, very tiny little laptop, an old 286. And it's just, you see everything, but you don't see any graphics, and you can't run ActiveX directories and all of those things. So for some things like Wikipedia and the Internet Movie Database and you know, places like that, it works great. But if you're looking to download the latest episode of something off of Hulu, then you know it's not going to help you at all, as a matter of fact. But I actually do use Lynx. And of course, if I'm using Lynx, there's no way I'm going to get a virus.
There you go.
It's just not going to happen. All right, we're going to take another break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes. So if you're on the line, please stay on the line. If you're not on the line, I have no idea why you're not, because we're having fun, I guess. As long as we're having fun, that's what counts. We will be back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, the mighty Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites. This is 1180 WHAN. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. For those of you watching the webcam, we were all crowded around my machine watching Lynx do its magic. It was very cool. All right, before we get back to the phones, I need to remind you, Microsoft will release 4 security patches for its Windows, Exchange, and SQL products on Tuesday, all rated important, which is lower than critical, which I think at least 2 of them are. The Exchange and SQL flaws are elevation of privilege bugs, meaning that an attacker could theoretically exploit them to get administrative access to a PC. One of the Windows flaws is labeled a spoofing bug, meaning it could help hackers trick the user into doing things like visiting malicious websites. The 4th update fixes a Windows flaw, or some other F word, that could allow an attacker to run unauthorized code on a victim's PC, Microsoft said. Normally, this type of flaw is rated critical. critical by Microsoft, but in this case, the bug was probably given a less severe rating because it doesn't work without the user first taking some extra actions or adding special software or drivers. So what they're saying is they assume no one ever clicks yes on a download. I mean, we have that same problem with the latest Mac virus. You have to actually, it asks you if it can install something. And so people are saying, well, then it's very low. Everybody clicks yes all the time.
Yes. They do it so fast they don't even realize.
Right. And so just because it downloads something doesn't make it safer.
Read before you click.
Exactly. Most people don't. The remote code execution flaw affects Vista, there's a surprise, and Windows Server 2008. The SQL vulnerability affects Microsoft's SQL Server software and the internal SQL software that ships with some versions of Windows. It does not affect Vista or XP users, but it does exist on Windows 2000, Windows Server 2003, and Windows Server 2008 products. Microsoft published a note on the upcoming security patches on its website on Thursday. Unless it's forced to rush out an emergency fix, they release their security patches on the second Tuesday of each month. Microsoft also said on Thursday that it's planning to upgrade the Windows Update software, thank God, that it uses to deliver bug fixes to PC desktops. The upgrade will speed up the software download process. Currently, you time the download process for updates with a glacier. So it would be really nice to be able to do it with, say, the Mayan calendar. They're investing heavily in reducing the amount of time it takes Windows Update Agent to scan to see if updates are available. In some cases, we've seen some instances of the scan times on some machine decreasing almost 20%, which means you can download an update during the lifetime of the hardware. Microsoft plans to make further changes to the Windows Update software and back-end infrastructure over the next few months. So Microsoft's monthly visitor comes out this Tuesday, so be prepared, be ready, be very, very afraid.
And kind of an interesting side effect of Patch Tuesday has now become Exploit Thursday.
Yep.
As soon as the patches are released.
Or Exploit Monday.
Exploit Monday, yeah. As soon as the patches are released, people can see what they fix and write an exploit for that fix because they know a lot of people aren't going to get to updating it yet.
Right. And a lot of people say, well, you know what? I'll wait a couple of days and see what it breaks. Well, that means by, you know, Wednesday, your machine is hacked with whatever that open exploit was. All right. Our next caller, Barry from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Barry. What's your question?
Good morning to you folks.
And to you.
I listen to you and have for years every Sunday.
Thank you.
And I like a very squeaky clean machine. So I usually buy, and I don't use the free versions. I use the pay versions. Of all the anti-spyware, adware kind of things that here you recommend, I'm currently using Adware. Mm-hmm. And Spyware Doctor, and I run both of those, do a scan every day. I also have Zone Alarm. All of these are the paid versions, and Zone Alarm taking care of the antivirus. I once in a while run Registry Mechanic and Registry Booster. So my question is, with the Adware and Spyware Doctor, And maybe the Zone Alarm, do you think I could do better? Are there newer recommendations now?
No, I think you pretty much have it well covered. As long as your Zone Alarm, you said, also has the antivirus software?
That is correct.
Okay. No, then you've got your bases covered. And as long as, you know, it's staying on top of things, one that you might want to try that you can download and try out for a little bit that I'm liking also is Super Anti-Spyware.
I tried that for a little while. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like it.
Okay, well, to each his own, I mean.
And my machine stays clean, so.
Then you're good.
Kind of like a well baby checkup.
Yeah, well, see, one of the things we say is that these cleaning programs are sort of your second line of defense if something gets by. Mm-hmm. Your first line of defense is don't do dangerous things. Don't click on yes when something pops up.
Well,
read it first.
Course,
and,
yeah,
don't go to suspicious sites. And don't accept files from people you don't know.
Right.
In fact, even don't accept files from people you do know unless you know they're sending you a file because they could be infected.
Mm-hmm.
So the one way to think of it is your first line of defense is your mouse.
Yeah.
Here's your brain.
Your behavior.
And that's right. And well, I just
it's just like if you don't want to get mugged, don't walk down dark alleys with $20 bills hanging out of your pocket.
Right.
I know the scream now for Bill Cosby fans.
Right. I think you should be fine at this point, Barry. Yeah. The things you're doing make the most sense. cinch. We're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes. But Dave Enright, Steve Wright, Chris Reich, Rob Lenton, and Nick Frances. It's 50 minutes after the hour with Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 54 minutes after the hour, strap yourselves in, kiddies. Get your footy jammies on, grab your mugs of hot cocoa, sit Indian style around the rocking chair, which is up and running in Second Life. Because if we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Help me. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Oh, I'm ready. Hey, Clarabelle!
Here we go.
What part of Simple Fix don't you understand? And what I'm talking about, folks, is you folks got to be aware of what's going on in some of these places that you dial 1-800-I-DON'T-SPEAK-ENGLISH and have them send your computer in to get it fixed. Because I had one, literally, that we had to send on in. It was for a keyboard. It happened to be the A and the S, and I think it was the P and the O keys. Didn't work. So the keyboard needed to be fixed. We send it in under warranty. It comes back. The hard drive has been formatted. Why? It's a stupid keyboard.
Because they look at every possible problem.
You take the thing up. Well, when the keys don't work like that and they knew it was only certain keys, it was a malfunction in the keyboard, not the whole OS, so you don't need to reformat the whole GD machine.
That would require somebody to actually think at some point.
It's quicker and easier to follow the script and restore your system. And then
but
if
no,
work,
here's the best part. Yeah. I called and said, why the HE double hockey sticks? Did you do this? They hung up on me. I called back. I says, I'm not going away. Why did you do this? I gave them the number and all this. I don't know. We'll get back to you. Quick. And I did this 3 times, and they hung up because they had no reason, because I was really furious because some of the other information, they had backed up the emails, and but there was a couple of the documents that they didn't get to, and the person, my client said, yes, I had everything backed up, but then she remembered, oh,
everything
one
but.
Other thing.
I've heard that before, everything but.
But they kept hanging up on me because they had no logical answer.
Right, well, it looks like you won't be buying from them anymore.
Oh, it was annoying. Well, they didn't.
All
they went against
right,
my
kiddies.
Recommendation.
All right, it's time for Uncle Dave to go back in the box for another week. We are going to make sure that you wipe out your cocoa mugs. Some of you did not clean them last week, and you know what that means? No cookie for you. Get off your footy pajamas, put on your clothes again, and we've got Uncle Dave put away for another week. Thank heaven. He was particularly energetic today. We are going to take a break. It is time for all the things you really listen to WHAM for. The news, the weather, the sports, all that good stuff. On the other side of that, we'll have our poll, a whole lot more news, and of course, a lot more of your phone calls. So if you are on the line, please stay on the line. If you're not on the line, start dialing now. You never know. Call early, call often. That's our motto. We'll be right back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Chris Reich. The return of Rob Linton, that one person who called in and said, welcome back, Rob, and he's starting to cry over there. He's misting up a little bit. I'm Nick Francesco with 57 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, 1180. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright. My eyes have been burned.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
Oh. And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Okay. I just don't, please, for God's sake, whatever else you may or may not do today, don't go up to the hot tub. That's all I'm saying in Second Life.
For he's down on the platform.
He's on the platform?
Yes.
Oh, geez, and crackers, Steve.
You folks don't know what you're missing in Second Life.
Lev is currently, even as we speak, quickly building a bottle of eye bleach to hand out to everyone. All right, back to the poll. As you know, every week we do a poll on our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Last week, our poll was about, does your company use Macs? Since it was reported that more and more companies are using Macs. 276 of you voted, making it number 229 in the all-time hit list. Thank you very much. And 48% of you said no. 28% of you said work. What is this work you speak of? 16% said yes, and 8% said, I'm self-employed, you insensitive clod, which actually, of course, doesn't actually tell us exactly what it is you may use. This week's poll We talked about it at the top of the show to give you folks a chance to comment on it. No one did. Ahem. But we'll talk about it again for a moment. For the first time, fiber-based broadband access is expanding faster than cable. Cable still has more numbers every month than fiber, but in terms of percentage of growth, fiber is bigger. The interesting numbers to me in this particular thing were there are 42 million fiber broadband users, 79.6 million cable users, and 238 million DSL users. And this is worldwide, not just in the U.S. This is worldwide. China is by far the fastest growing users of fiber. And in fact, they are closing in on the U.S. in terms of the total number of subscribers. Japan is big. South Korea is big. Asia amounts to over 35 million subscribers of fiber. So it's pretty good. In the U.S. and Europe, fiber is having a tougher time because deploying the technology is expensive. And incumbent operators, as they call them, incumbent operators, are reluctant to share the infrastructure, which is the polite way of putting all of that. So that's our poll of the week. Which net connection do you have? And the choices, of course, cable, DSL, fiber, still on dial-up, you insensitive clod, other, and none. Wait, what? If you have none, how did you get here? So far, we have 100, and he quickly waits, 112 votes. Cable is still number one with 64% of the votes, followed by DSL with 21% of the votes. So our numbers pretty much are exactly the opposite of the rest of the world when you get right down to that. And of course, at the bottom.
I'm going to say some of that's because cable made it to Rochester before DSL did.
So right.
A lot of us old timers were on cable from the beginning.
Right, right, right. And when you're done typing in your poll choice, clicking on that, I know you've got more to say, and believe me, you do. So look at the little yellow box underneath. If you click on Give Us Your Opinion, it will take you to my website. Are you ready this time? AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
He's had too much time off. He's enjoying this way too much.
Well, yeah, I mean, you guys go and change the format of the show, and when you do things,
well,
while
if you
I'm
were
gone,
around
I mean, you know,
more often.
See, we were without adult supervision for two entire
well,
weeks.
Well, that's why I came back, because I had heard what was going on around here while I was gone.
And once you escaped from the Turkish prison, you
that's
had to
right.
live your way
so,
back
or whatever
here.
Else you told people I was doing.
So there you are at my website, AskNick.com. I put out a newsletter. There's a search function. If you're a member, and it's only $15 a year, so I'm not sure why you're not a member, you can search through every newsletter, tip, trick, website, everything, rant and rave, everything that I've done on the website, you can search through it, find answers, ask questions in the forums, whatever, whatever. That's what it's all about. And, of course, much similar stuff on Soundbites. We have a forum that people go into and have fun. So join us for all of those things, and feel free to mention how delighted you are with your individual service provider. Our next caller is Mark from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's your question?
Good morning. Good afternoon, gentlemen. I am looking to buy a laptop that, and this particular one I'm looking at, only has HDMI out. And I would like to get your opinion on different ways of getting a analog VGA output. And there are devices out there that do USB to VGA. There is actually an adapter that does HDMI to DVI-D, but I need to connect to a projector that only does analog. What's your recommendations?
Get a different laptop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The USB to VGA work, you know, they're about $100 or so, but the quality isn't very good.
Yeah.
Well, it depends on what you're willing to pay.
Is it good enough for a projector?
Yeah,
Well, what are you projecting? Static PowerPoint slides? Probably. If you're trying to do video, no.
Right. Well, we have one that I've forgotten the name of, and I apologize. I've been trying to remember it for 10 minutes. It is a USB connector that gives you two monitors. It's a dual-head display.
Matrox.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
That works pretty good, but you're right. When you do high-end graphics stuff, it lags considerably, even at USB 2.0 speeds.
and the Matrox, I actually have the triple head to go, and it actually limits the resolution you can output to.
So right.
That, yeah, well, it makes your computer think it has one giant monitor instead of three small monitors. So it a lot depends on the resolution your video card is capable of.
Right, and I would be very, very careful about running it under Vista, believe me.
It's actually interesting that you found a laptop that doesn't have DVI or VGA. It's just HDMI. That's unusual.
That's unique.
It's a gaming laptop. It's an Alienware laptop.
So you want to use HDMI to go to your high-definition projector for your games.
No, I don't have high-definition projectors. No, I mostly just do presentations with PowerPoint, and I need to just use basic analog projectors or go through basic analog switchers.
For PowerPoint, as long as you're not using all the hoop-de-doo features, PowerPoint should be fine.
Yeah, it should be adequate.
I certainly wouldn't use it for everyday use. They work, they're just not great. Again, if you're me, I have old eyes, so they're fine. But for people who really care about the quality of the video, they're not that good.
Is there a product that has that's like a PCSDIA to VGA or something that doesn't use software to convert to VGA through USB?
That's a possibility. How about, do you have a PC card slot or express card slot?
It does have an express card.
Yeah, you might be able to find an express card video card.
Yeah, have you guys used them at all? Or have you know anything?
I used Margi.
What's it called?
M-A-R-G-I had a series of devices that did that. M-A-R-G-I. Now there's a called Presenter to Go. I don't know that Margi makes that anymore because it was originally designed for handhelds like the Palm handhelds.
Mm-hmm.
I used to give presentations all over the place and I would just carry my Palm with Margi's Presenter to Go. And I would get more questions about how are you controlling that PowerPoint than I would about the presentation. I stopped using it, although it was insanely convenient because it was just two little tiny devices. But Margi2Go did have a PCMCIA slot device.
I'm finding them from Targus and Belkin. And
yeah, I was just about to say.
All the regular card companies. Yeah,
Belkin's pretty reliable.
Okay.
All right.
Excellent. Thank you very much, guys.
All right. Good luck.
Yeah. It's an interesting use. I'm sorry he's hung up already. I wanted to ask him why, if his main purpose was PowerPoint presentations, he bought a laptop that wouldn't do PowerPoint presentations.
Well, his main purpose is to play games.
Well, clearly.
And his job is to do PowerPoint
presentations. Clearly. Right.
Well, one might have come
Steve's
before the other.
Steve's good at making the inferences.
Right.
Yeah. Well, one might have come before the other. I mean, if he had already had that laptop and then this presented itself to do PowerPoint presentations.
Right.
Well, here's a thought for anyone thinking about running the USB option, USB to video. Would that not effectively be using the system memory for video memory?
That's another part of that problem. Yeah. Unless the device has its own
video memory. Yeah, most
memory
of them are bigger boxes.
Which it's unlikely to if it's just a...
It's not a cable.
It's a box.
Yeah. Okay.
And so there's got to be circuitry in it translating that signal. Software in the computer telling it to put video out USB, so the box may have video RAM in it also.
Which means you're also stuck with whatever version of Windows that thing has a
driver for.
And so it goes on and on and on. It's really not your best solution for external video. Our next caller, Marlene from Webster, New York. Welcome, Marlene.
Hello, thanks for taking my call, and I want to say that you have a great show, fellas.
Thank you so very much.
Very good. Something that's needed, especially for me.
Why we're here, just for you. The Marlene Show.
I'm sorry?
The Marlene Show.
Okay. My question for you is that when I'm starting up my laptop, in the lower left corner of the bar, just above the start button, I get a message. The message says, detecting proxy settings. What is that?
You must have it in your connection settings. If you go to...
That's an automatic thing I've seen, too. Basically, a proxy is mostly used at businesses and large companies. So you've got thousands of people accessing the internet. The proxy server sits in the middle, and say you go to CNN... And the guy next to you goes to CNN. It loads it from your local proxy server rather than going all the way out to the internet.
It's an intermediary machine that makes surfing the net faster for a large corporation where many people go to the same sites.
Do you, Marlene, do you use just to say at home, or do you use it at work also?
No, just at home.
Right. Well, it will attempt to detect proxy settings.
There's an automatically detect proxy settings inside of Windows that's right. on by
and
default.
And if you turn that off, that message should go away, and Dave has it up, so he'll tell
you. Yeah, if you go into the control panel, go into Internet Options.
Uh-huh.
And underneath that, it'll open up a window that says Internet Properties. If you go to the Connection tab, and in the Connection tab, there's a LAN Settings. And okay. you'll click on that, and it will open up another window that says Local Area Network LAN Settings. And uncheck the Proxy Server button there. It's the second window down, the second pane. Uncheck that. You can check the Automatic Detect setting.
Okay.
Uncheck that Proxy Server one, and that warning should go away for you.
All right. I was very concerned. I thought it might have been something bad.
No. No.
Well, it's not a big deal, but it does slow you down a little bit.
There are some viruses that will insert their fake proxy servers when you go to PayPal.com, you're going to the fake proxy. Well, it's a real proxy, but a fake website.
Right.
Yep.
So there are things that can be bad because of that.
But because Marlene listens to the show, she knows to dance Security Tango and to update her antivirus and all of that good stuff. Right, Marlene?
That's right.
There you go. Right.
You're good to go.
Thank you so much.
You're quite welcome.
Hey, you too. Great week. Our next caller is Barbara on a cell phone. Welcome, Barbara. What's your question?
Hello?
Hello?
Hi. Yes. We have, my husband just hooked up the second computer with a router, and we are on Frontier.
Yes.
And I'm trying to figure out why my Outlook Express mail doesn't both computers, but only, back and forth on different ones.
Is this a problem sending or receiving?
I'm sorry, I didn't even hear the problem. Hello?
No, she's cutting, cutting
Barb,
in and out.
You're cutting in and out, Barb. I can't hear a thing you're saying. I apologize. I don't know if
you might want to try. You might want to try calling this on the regular line.
Yeah, she got a second computer, and she's having trouble getting Outlook to work on the second computer with Frontier. The usual problem is that Frontier requires authenticated SMTP to send email. So you have to go into your Outlook settings under preferences, under accounts, under SMTP, and turn on password authentication for sending
email.
Right,
and what we find for a lot of people who bring laptops back and forth to work, et cetera, is they're set up for one, then they go to the other, and they have trouble.
Yeah, I've got cable at home and DSL at work, and I have to switch mine back and forth.
Yep. I'm sorry, Barb. I really apologize.
That's where it's sometimes better to have two different email addresses. One for one for the other.
Yes.
Well, it's the email servers. I have my own Jesse Group email address, but when I'm on Frontier, I have to use the Frontier server to send email, no matter what my address is.
Right, and same with Roadrunner.
No, Roadrunner's open still.
Oh, no, right.
Yeah, Frontier requires authenticated SMTP.
Right.
So you can receive your email no matter who you're connected to. The problem is sending new email.
Right. Which is why a lot of people use a web-based email program now, like Squirrel Mail or
even your providers, Frontier
Google,
and Time Warner,
Yahoo.
Have their own web mail.
Yeah, I would say.
Or even Yahoo, a generic web mail service, yeah.
Well, Roadrunner's even gotten in.
A general web mail service, I should say.
Why so many people use Google Mail. So many billions of people using Google Mail. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
I've never seen Chris move that fast. At 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Very quickly, Microsoft Internet Explorer 8 Beta 2 will put a bullseye on malicious sites courtesy of their new smart screen filter. This feature, which was revealed on July 2nd, is in answer to the blacklisting features already built into Firefox 3 and Opera 9.5 and builds on the phishing filter introduced in IE7 with, among other things, anti-malware support and new heuristic detection capabilities to block known bad sites. Security has been a key battleground between Microsoft's Internet Explorer, Mozilla's Firefox, and other browsers. In addition to blocking bad sites, the filter also protects users who click on a link leading to a download on a rogue site by interrupting the download with a warning. When it comes to thwarting cross-site scripting, Microsoft has added a filter that uses a heuristics-based approach to sanitize injected scripts. The cross-site scripting filter operates as an IE8 component with visibility into all requests and responses flowing through the browser. My hope, of course, is that it will also work in Outlook and Outlook Express to prevent cross-site scripting in emails. What's interesting is they're also planning something called per-site ActiveX, which means you can allow ActiveX for one site and disallow it for other sites, which, of course, is what Tom was interested in when he was thinking he needed an ActiveX plugin to listen to the show, but was hoping for the ability to keep the thing safe. Our next caller, Dick from Webster, New York. Welcome, Dick. What's your question?
Afternoon. Every time I go on Firefox, or practically every time, I keep getting a warning that says Firefox EXE has encountered a problem and it needs to close. And this happens like every other page that I opened up.
Okay, what version are you running?
Last night I downloaded the 3, and I noticed the problem more and more and more. So I went back to the previous version, which was, I think it was 2-point-something.
Yeah. 2.14.
Yeah, and then I went back to that, and now I'm still having a problem.
It sounds like a corruption somewhere or an add-on problem. Have you added any extra features to it?
No. In fact, I took all my add-ons off a couple days ago.
Now, when did this problem start rearing its head?
About a month and a half, 2 months ago. It was only popping up at the time. It was only popping up maybe once every other day. And
now, you've danced a tango?
Yeah. I danced a tango a while ago, but I've been updating it with antivirus all the time.
Have you run like super anti-spyware?
No, I didn't run the super antivirus spyware. I ran the AVG fireworks for AVG.
Antivirus, yeah.
Antivirus, and then the adware, I ran that.
How long ago did you do that, the adware and spyware?
About 2 days ago.
And SpyBot?
Not SpyBot.
See, you're only getting half of it. Adware only goes into programs. SpyBot goes deep into the registry. That's why we say both.
Okay, I will run both.
I would try running Super Anti-Spyware. That seems to do a pretty good job of catching both programs and digging deep into the registry.
Do you have a link to that on your website?
Yes, we do, sir.
Okay.
You also might want to try Firefox in safe mode, which turns off a lot of stuff more than just disabling your add-ons. That would reset toolbars and controls and bookmarks and everything to see if it is something else or something corrupt besides the Firefox program itself.
Okay, and then I got another question for you. Last night when I was on Firefox 3, I tried to delete my data, my private data, and it wouldn't delete it.
Well, if you're in it, if you're using the program, it won't let you delete it.
No, I mean...
The private data.
The private data won't delete.
It sounds like you've got an issue with the program in general, and it may well have been a corruption with version 2 that is continuing in version 3.
Okay.
My suggestion is uninstall it completely, and I mean get it off your system entirely.
Uninstall 3?
And 2 if it's still there.
And 2, okay.
And uninstall everything.
Okay, and then...
And then re-download it clean and install clean.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Have a good day.
You too.
He's also got to make sure under the Mozilla folder that the Foxfire folder is deleted also. Because even though you clean it out, it doesn't get rid of the folders.
Right. So if you're still listening, Dick, get rid of the Firefox folder under the Mozilla folder in program...
And there's also usually another one. Let's see. Under my computer... And you go into, what is it? There's another one. Hold on a second. Bring it up. Yeah. Under documents and settings, I think so.
You got to get rid of every piece.
Do a search on Firefox.
And Mozilla.
And Mozilla. And it'll tell you where it's buried, you know, the different folders, and delete all those.
Unfortunately, and this is true of every Windows program, I keep forgetting because I use Linux, and when you say purge, it purges. But
funny how that is.
Yeah, exactly. How odd is that? Under Windows, you often find that when you uninstall something, it does not uninstall completely.
It does a crappy job.
And I don't know if that has to, if that's a window. I'm beginning to think it's a Windows feature because it happens with so very many programs that I can't imagine that all of them have lazy programmers.
This would be a great opportunity for somebody out there listening to create a product and sell it, because I'm sure a lot of folks would do it, that, you know, you could sit there and say, uninstall a program. And it actually goes through the registry, removes literally all the folders that it created in the registry and in Windows.
Well, because there are some programs like that. You can buy watchdog programs. You install them, and as you install each program, it tracks what gets installed where, and then will help you. But then when you go to uninstall
they have to be installed first.
Yes. Right. Yeah. It's got to be the first thing you install when you buy a new machine.
Norton
and even
Utilities.
Then it won't work with Windows itself because that's already installed.
I was going to say Norton Utilities used to do that.
Yep.
Yeah.
But
they need another
does.
Utility that you could just say, all right, I want to uninstall this particular program and literally go through the complete registry, because it is a major pain going through trying to find all the incidents, and you got to delete them one at a time.
You know, considering that the registry is so very, very essential to running Windows, and it is so very, very fragile, you'd think people would pay more attention and take more care of how they handle the registry. But you get some programs, and they leave stuff just like a rabbit, just pellets everywhere.
More stuff than you can throw a stick at.
Yeah. All right, our next caller is Dan from Leroy, New York. Welcome, Dan. What's your question?
I just heard you talking about an uninstaller, and I wanted to mention for you that there's a program that's free. It's called Revo, R-E-V-O, uninstaller. If you Google that and install it, it'll do exactly what you said. It'll search through your system and take everything out.
That's R-E-V-O?
Yes.
RevoUninstaller.com. Looks like CNET gave it a 5-star rating.
Nice.
Oh, thank you. You know, that's what I love about the show.
Yep. People call in and answer our questions for us. We need to have two banks of phones. One with the questioners, one with the answerers. And we'll just say, and here's Dan for Dick, and here's Fred for Mary, and here's Nancy for Joe. And
it just makes us look smart.
Now,
yeah, exactly.
And you've tried it and liked it?
Oh, yes, I've been using it. I stumbled under it about 2 months ago, and I've used it several times since then, and it really does a pretty nice job.
So it will completely remove all the entries and folders and everything else?
Yeah, what it'll do is it'll bring up a screen with icons for all the programs installed. Double-click on the one you want to get rid of. It'll go through and it'll basically invoke the uninstaller for it, and then it goes into a phase two. It'll search the registry, and then it'll search for orphans left behind.
And now what about, say, something that you think you've uninstalled and there's still remnants there?
I haven't run into that yet. Where I've used it is where I've had to completely uninstall a program because there's things behind in the registry.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you try a reinstall, you know, you don't really get the result you want. So in order to really clean it, that seems to do a pretty good job.
Well, I'll have to check that out. And who knows? It may be the next program for Second Life's featured bulletin board.
There you go. It looks nice.
Thank you very much, Dan. I appreciate that. Always looking for good tools and toys to play with.
And that's what we love with people. Yeah, exactly. Free is always good. Free is always good.
Well, the thing is, free and that it works well. Those are my two criteria. That's why before playing around with anything and I put anything up or recommend it or put it onto the Soundbite CD, I've played with it. I do a little research and, you know, let it break my machine. I don't care. You know, I've got one that I can sit there and play around. If it crashes, I'm used to it. Just put back the original image that I had to start with, and back from my days of beta testing. Learned that a long time ago. I got a ghost image, and if it messes something up,
Well, exactly. We were just talking about, Chris and I were talking about that before the show, actually creating virtual machines. You know, if you have a laptop or a desktop that's fast enough and powerful enough, multiple processors, at least a couple of gig of RAM, you can run virtual systems inside your regular system. I do that. I have a Linux laptop for when I'm answering people's questions and doing that stuff. I really don't remember where everything is in Windows. I know that comes as a shock to so many of you, but I bring up a virtual system running Windows. And that lets me run, you know, I can say, oh, yeah, if you go, I know it's in the programs, control panel. Oh, yeah, it's right here. Bing, 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 and I can lead people to it.
Because you have to see it to remember it
sometimes.
You got to
see it sometimes because there's so very much stuff. So I bring it up in a virtual machine. That's also where I do a lot of my testing of Windows software. I'll run it as a virtual machine under Linux. First, if you run it correctly as a virtual machine, it's not going to get away from you. You couldn't, it doesn't wander off outside the reservation and do things to your other system. And secondly, of course, my other system is Linux. So it's if it's a Windows bug, see, if it's a Linux bug, it's not going to get hold in the Windows machine. If it's a Linux bug, if it's a Windows bug, it's not going to be able to damage the Linux box outside. And if I find that something really kind of makes me a little skittish or leery, I just wipe out the whole thing and restart from scratch with a new virtual machine, and nothing happens. Nothing gets written, nothing gets damaged, nothing gets changed. So I find using a virtual machine to be the best way, personally, that I do that stuff. And I can run on the Mac, of course, I can run both Windows and Linux as virtual machines, but I can't run the Mac yet as a virtual machine under Linux.
Right. You'd have to run a Mac computer running OS X and then virtualize below that, which is what I do.
Right. And that works great, but now you can't test Mac programs because you're running them on the native operating system.
Right.
And that's kind of too bad, but it does. I understand why.
Well, you can test it, but you're at risk.
Exactly. But yeah, I've been running the virtual system for a very long time now. I can run both XP and Vista as virtual machines. I've actually run other Linux distributions as virtual machines under Linux. It's actually very funny. And running virtual machines, for those of you who have the need to test things, actually works very well and is very nice.
You know, Nick, I'm going to try it. I'm going to try to install Mac OS X as a virtual machine running under Mac OS X.
Oh, let me know how that works.
I will. Be back with you next week.
I hope you have enough RAM to do that. That's going to take quite a bit of RAM.
Well, it will slow the system down somewhat, right, but let's see if it's possible.
But for testing, that's what it's for.
Sure.
All right, our next caller is Jim from Penfield, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Well, I just wondered if you guys could help me. I had a LaserJet 4P printer that was hooked through a device called an access box.
Mm-hmm.
Basically allows you to put the printer port, and then that hooks into the network.
Right. HP's brand was called the Jet Direct.
Yeah.
And I was able to use that printer when I remoted into a my work computer, like VirtualLAN.
Right.
But I bought a new HP 5100 or some goofy thing with a inkjet jobber, and it has a built-in Ethernet already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't make that damn thing work under Vista. I can't make it work under XP. Just can't make it work at all.
You usually got to install it on one machine to at least the software to manage it.
Right. Actually, the software to manage it ended up, when you put this driver in for HP, it ended up putting it on all the boxes I have, my wife's computer, my computer.
Yeah, HP.
We share in the house. You know?
HP annoys the heck out of me. They make great hardware and really, really, really.
What I found easier, and I had to do this for my network printer, is I assigned it in an actual address.
Yeah, if you assign it a static address, then it's better. Because every time you turn a device on, it asks your router for an address and can end up with different addresses every time you turn
it on. So if you set it to a fixed IP address, then no matter if your network goes up and down, it's always going to be that one address.
And then when you're setting it up on the computer, you have to set it up as a TCP printer.
Right,
that's one of the options is a standard
TCP
port.
And you put it in, type in that address, it'll go out and look for it on that one, and then no matter how many times and what way you boot up your machines, it will always be that address and should have no problems finding it.
And one thing you can do to test if the printer itself thinks it's working is open your web browser and type that address in, and you'll get to the printer's internal management program.
Okay.
And if that doesn't work, then there's something wrong in the printer or the address isn't working right, or the gateway is wrong or something in the printer setup.
So, yeah, there you go. Thank you very much.
No.
We are going to take a break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 40 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
I don't even remember eating that. 44 I was gonna minutes ask after if you the are. Hour, we are Soundbites. Holy mother
Live pearl. Radio at its best. You know what I'm saying?
You can't beat it. I don't care what anybody says.
God, I've missed you.
Yeah. All right. Oh, PDF. How many of you have ever wanted to edit PDFs? Raise your hands. Don't bother. This is radio. I can't see you. Easy PDF editing what?
Editing PDF without paying $300 for Acrobat. Yeah.
Yes.
Editing PDF is coming to openoffice.org, but you'll have to be patient for a few months. Recently posted to the openoffice.org extension site, the Sun PDF Import Extension, or SPI, is only in beta and only works with recent developer builds of OpenOffice 3.0. Excuse me, openoffice.org 3.0, which is scheduled for September release. Right now, the quality of the final release is anybody's guess, but beta capabilities fall squarely in the middle of available PDF import tools. By default, SPI opens PDF in the Draw application, although you could also use Impress, which shares much of the same code. This default might seem strange at first, especially if your PDF file is text. Actually, though, using Draw is logical given the limitations of the PDF format. No application, not even Acrobat, which is the proprietary PDF editor made by Adobe, the company that wrote the PDF specification, is able to edit more than a single line while preserving format. Given this limitation, importing to Draw makes sense because it can treat each line as a separate text object for editing. Although a rearrangement of a paragraph requires line-by-line editing with SPI and can be tricky if you need to add an extra line, the extensions leave you no worse off than any other PDF editor. At least you're in a relatively friendly user interface. Those of you who have more needs, SPI is ahead of AbbeyWord, which just extracts the text from a PDF file and not the graphics. Although if that's what you want, just the text from a PDF file in a regular text file, AbbeyWord does that, ABI Word, which is a free word processor and a very nice one. KWord, which is available only for the KDE desktop. AbbeyWord is both a Linux and a Windows, and I think also a Mac.
Yes, it runs on the Mac.
Product, which preserves line division. KWord preserves line division, but not most other formatting, and that's just it. But if you really want, pretty much Inkscape is the product, Inkscape, which is really a terrific product. It's another painting program. The main limitations of Inkscape are single-page imports, and it doesn't preserve hyperlink. And, of course, if you have a Windows machine, PDF Edit is still the most reliable PDF editor. But a lot of development happens in just a few months, and if SPI continues as it has started, its final release might just become an essential OpenOffice.org extension. I can't tell you how many people want to be able to edit PDF documents. The whole point behind a PDF document, of course, is that you can't really edit it. What you get is what you see is what you get, and...
So it's designed a double-edged sword.
Well, yes, and it's designed specifically so that, for example, if somebody sends me a contract they want me to sign, it's a PDF. So theoretically, at least, I can't actually change anything. I can print it, I can sign it, I can send it back via fax or whatever, but I can't actually make any changes to it. Of course, I also use a program called, I have no idea how you pronounce this, since generally they don't let you pronounce these things, Journal X. It's Journal with an X instead of a J, and it is a Linux program. I don't know if there's a Windows version, but it is really designed for tablets, although of course you can use it on a desktop, and it lets me do handwriting, so I can actually write on the screen,
and it interprets it pretty good.
It interprets it pretty badly, but that's you're way better off just leaving it as text at this point. As with every Linux application, it's still in beta. You know how that goes.
Well, yeah.
But it lets me write, and I take notes all day long on that. And one of the things that you can do is bring up a PDF document and write on it. So I do that a lot, where I bring up, for example, a contract or something somebody wants me to sign for, you know, non-disclosure or whatever. They send it to me as a PDF. I bring it up in the screen, I write on it, and then I save it as a PDF again.
So you can write over what's on it, but not edit what's there.
Right, exactly. Okay. So, for example, when I just recently signed a fairly large contract, they sent it to me as a PDF. I brought it up in Journal, and
But
cross stuff out, change numbers, change things. And
we should quickly mention that PDF is now an ISO open standard.
They just did that.
So third-party developers will have more access to the code, and we may see more PDF editors.
Exactly, exactly. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, 49 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 54 minutes after the hour, our next caller is Ron from Albion, New York. Welcome, Ron. What's your question?
Hey, I'm trying to find a Linux users group out around Albion. Is there such a thing?
In Albion?
Around Albion. You know, it's if I went to Rochester, it's quite a haul.
Yeah, it is.
You know, so wow. I just wonder if there's any, if you know of anything out there.
I'm afraid I do not. Have you Googled?
Yes, I have, and they get into, you know, they're in Lockport and Buffalo. And,
what, Ron, one thing I would suggest.
Here's one in Albion, Pennsylvania.
Ron, one thing I would suggest, though, is I know it'd probably be a pain, but go to one of the ones in Rochester.
Yeah.
And talk to the folks there. Who knows? They might have some other contacts of folks or knowing folks out in your area.
Or even
but if
on
you
their
actually
website.
Go to the a meeting, you don't know where some of these folks are coming from. Or they might know of other folks that could help you out in other areas.
Okay. Okay.
You can email them at Lugor, L-U-G-O-R, at realtime1.com. And then their website is lugor.org, the Linux Users Group of Rochester.
There may be members of Lugor that are coming out from your direction. You could meet them there. You should check out the group in Lockport. I would suggest checking in Batavia, maybe even Niagara Falls.
Right.
And you may find that there are people just going out there, and you could start your own Linux Users Group in Albion. You could be the president.
Yeah.
You
right.
could be the boss of everybody.
Cool.
That's it. He'll be the boss. Our next caller, Doug, from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, Doug. What's your question?
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Not so great. My father's computer crashed, and I tried to do a soft system restart where it just restored, and it told me that I'm missing file Windows root system 32/HAL.dll. And it tells me to reinstall that from the system software, but the computer didn't come with any software, with any restore software.
It might be on a hidden partition. Is it an HP?
Yes. Well, it's a compact.
Yeah, there's. Usually when it's booting up, there is a particular F10 or F12 key that you've got to hit, and it'll take you to the hidden partition.
I already went through on the F10, the system restore function during the startup.
What version of Windows is it that they're trying to install? XP Home Pro?
XP Home Edition.
If you could borrow a copy of somebody's XP Home CD?
Physical disk,
The physical CD, and do a restore from that. You're not breaking any license agreement because basically the CDs are all the same. It's that little license number that is on the side of the machine that you got to type in.
The big issue there is the specific HP drivers that the HP install would put in, Compaq install would put in.
Well, that still might find it, though, on the hidden partition.
What happens a lot of time, though, even after, because I've tried doing that, you copy that one file from another computer.
And then it's another file.
And then it's another file, then it's another file, then it's another file,
Okay.
So if you can do it, find the disk and do a restore over itself.
Can't you, from that hidden partition, create a disk?
Sometimes,
not always. It's very hit and miss.
I'm sorry, Doug.
It will let you erase the hard drive and start over again.
Yes, it will.
We don't want that.
Using another Windows disk, will that retain all the documents that are on the computer?
Make sure you don't hit the erase disk option.
What you got to do is put the CD in and have it boot from it. The first screen, you're going to say install. You say okay to that. And then you're going to hit the F8 to do the agreement. After the agreement, you're going to have the option to continue or restore. Do the restore function then. It's the second time that you'll see a